trust the process.
Trust the process.
Ladies and gentlemen and sports fans of all ages, welcome to the Swear Word Party. Trust the process. Vancouver's sixth best Canucks-related show. But the number one Canucks 76ers NFL pro wrestling movies, TV, music, and pop culture extravaganza. Please welcome your hosts, Wyatt the Stanchion Art and Jay Bowman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Trust the Process.
Oh, Wyatt, it's been a while. I don't know. I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to start the show. Help.
You got this. Is that did I help you joke a bit there?
You know what? Yeah. I think
did that work?
Yeah, that worked a little bit.
Yeah, that worked a little bit. You're gonna fucking fail, you piece of shit. Get the show started.
See, now it's a spite thing.
Yeah.
Now it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna rally and I'm gonna have the best opening ever. You know, this one's for you, Wyatt. This one's for BD Wong. Oh. Right? I'm gonna shove this whole thing right in his face. Just give me 1 second here.
You got to go full Al. I'm going to say, we're going to talk about the game, but Al Murdoch might be the early runner for a playoff MVP. I'm just saying it right now. I don't know if anyone has watched the game. We'll get into it, but he leaned into those names.
Yeah.
Like, even penalty calls for Hawking. You're like, holy shit, Al. It was amazing.
Yeah, Al was not playing around at all. Sorry, one sec, Wyatt. For real, though, I don't have my shit up.
Just do it. Do it. No, you do it. Improv it now.
All right.
Keep it real.
All right, we are back in another episode of Trust the Process. Welcome to the Swear Word Party. My name is Jay Bowman, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Wyatt Arndt, the Stanchion.
What are all the names? What are all
I
the
don't
names?
Have the long list
what are
of
all,
nicknames.
Make up five nicknames right now. Right now. That's what I want.
It is indeed a great pleasure to present to you at this particular time, national and international known as the hardest working man in show business, the star of the show.
He's great. He's Wyatt Arndt. He's the Stanchion. Pay no attention to the man behind the outline.
Wow.
You know what's also funny is I never use my MacBook, really. Oh, I only use my MacBook for this, so I have no idea where I'm even going to find what I need.
You're just clicking fucking things for
yeah, I am fucking just randomly clicking around going, it's got to be here somewhere. And also, it's been a while since we've done this. All right. Well, I found it, but now it's like, oh, that's going to be it.
Oh, congrats. Hold on. Well done. You found your file.
That was 3 minutes into the show. God damn. Okay. Do you want your nicknames or not?
I do now. Yeah, I might as well. Might as well.
I am joined, as always, by the Napoleon of writing, the Don Draper of pen and paper, the flightless bird of the written word, the guru of gifts, the flu game phoenix, the magistrate of free the skate. He's got a pulse full of notches for your jersey botches. No need to worry. Here comes Mr. Surrey. Wyatt Arndt, the Stanchion. Wyatt, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I just feel like you're a hero of mine.
Oh,
and now
geez,
you
shut
just
up.
Fallen in stature now. Like, nothing makes sense anymore. Are we all just humans? You know, I thought I just had you on this pedestal.
No, you didn't.
And maybe it's good for me, right? Maybe it's good for me to see that happen. So I know that that's what life is like. And it just, the world feels a little bit dimmer tonight. That's all, you know?
Wow. Because I didn't have my intro queued up and all that stuff. I was so excited to do it. I just ran right into the show without being, without having my prep up. So
BD Wong knew.
Yeah, I guess BD Wong didn't know. Five rhyming nicknames right now. What's your problem? Has B Rabbit choking made the spoilers without context?
100% has to.
Fucking hell. Not the return I was hoping for.
This looks like Bowman's not quite a showman. All right, there's one.
Oh, shit! Oh, no!
Oh, good times.
All right, four more, tough guy.
Oh, there's Jordan, and I'm Boardman. I don't know.
You know what? I'm going to allow it. That was a stretch bigger than Demko's first big save. Yeah, but you know what?
I pulled some of that one.
And I'm not really going to ask for the other three.
I heard
game
myself.
Set match. It's over. Let's all go home. Yeah, we've got quite a lot to talk about. Obviously, game one, Vancouver Canucks, Nashville Predators was the other day, and you know, usually we would probably start with Canucks at seven. Wyatt, and makes sense. And, you know, even though the show hasn't been around since the early part of March and we were just kind of letting the rest of the season play out, doesn't matter when you listen to it, because
anytime is a good time for the swear word party.
Al Murdoch, can we take a second? Just a second right now. You'd mentioned it before, and just give it up for Al Murdoch. What a game.
He's always been the best at his job, but now he's like getting a bit wrestling with it now. Like the whole JT Miller, JT, and the fucking people filling the Miller part.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
And he's adding something like little Zed noises sometimes. Zdorov, like he's spicing it up.
Yeah.
And it's like he's been waiting for the playoffs for a long time, and now he's bringing his whole A game. And I wasn't ready for it. I just feel like everything he announced was like full bore. Every announcement there was like, it's now the intermission. You're like, oh my God, I got to get some fucking food. You feel jacked. Like, it's a good time.
I'm going to pay $14 for a medium beer. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go.
Yeah. No, he's done a fantastic job. The whole in-arena ring team entertainment has been just fucking fantastic. I know for a fact they've been working on this like for most of the season once they thought the playoffs were coming, and they blew it out of the park, man. It was honestly that we'll get into it, but that game was something I'm never going to forget.
Yeah, me too. But before we get into the Canucks, we're going to start with a segment that I don't know why I thought it was long dead, but I think we still got the jingle kicking around here somewhere. Jay Swing, hit it.
If the Canucks fans are beefing, it must mean Aquilino be tweeting.
That's right, folks. Once again, Aquilini be tweeting. Let's pull it up. Wyatt, I think people are pretty familiar with what the tweet is. What came across your mind last night when you saw him tweet? Man, so tight. Almost like a playoff game at 10:11 p.m.
Like, at first, because I was in the media scrum for a while, and I didn't see it till like, I think, 20 minutes after it had been up. And when I first saw someone had retweeted it, I was like, oh, they're retweeting the old one. Because that's what I do all the time, the old famous clip he did the first time. I'm like, oh, I'll bring that one up again. Good for them. And I checked the date. I'm like, no, there's no way he tweeted this tonight. And he fucking did. He tweeted tonight, which is the best clapback he's had ever on Twitter. I don't know if it was him who did it, if he has a really smart, savvy associate running his phone. I don't know. Maybe Chris Higgins has stepped up his game. Because now he's now the content guy now. He stepped off. He was skills development guy. And he's like, fuck that. I don't want to be part of the content team. And fun story, Chris Higgins was like walking around to the media, and so I said hi to him, and he was very nice. And then I told him, you thought the finals was pressure? You ain't seen nothing until you see a media scrum. And he laughed, said, no kidding. And so we shared a moment.
Oh!
So it was really, yeah, so Chris Higgins, good guy.
Delightful.
Yeah, but I do think, yeah, Aquilini, good for him. Like, he nailed that tweet. I got to give him kudos. I mean, there's not a lot I have given him kudos for over the years, but he hit a grand slam on that one.
It was incredible.
Stuff.
Yeah, like, I take back everything bad I've ever said. Most bad things I've said, I'll take those back.
Give yourself some wiggle room.
Yeah,
you know?
There are seven of them that I mean to this day and will take to the ground.
Yeah.
But that's absolutely crazy. Unbelievable. It was worth opening up the show and putting that ahead of Canucks in seven for maybe the last time ever Aquilini be tweeting. I don't know. Maybe he's going to get a taste of it. Maybe he goes now one too far.
He thinks it's like, he needs to retire
that
account.
Walk off
honestly.
The field.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the Costanza. You're done, right?
Yeah, this is Fast and Furious 7. The cars are driving, going their separate ways. Yeah. Paul Walker's
we're nodding
dead.
At him.
Shut
He's
it down.
He's nodding at us. Yeah.
Shut it down. Walk off the field. It's over. So, yeah. But, obviously, tons of Canucks stuff to get into, so let's get right into it. Canucks in 7. Wyatt, Canucks win game 1, 4-2 over the Nashville Predators. You were there covering the game from Media Row. First ever Canucks playoff game from up there?
Yes.
Oh, dude, take me through it.
Yeah, it was fun. I get to the game and I've got my media pass and that's all exciting. I'm starting to know the crew at the arena. When I first got there, back at the beginning of the season, I didn't really talk to a lot of people because I'm a slow burn, and so I just kind of didn't say much. But now they're like, we're giving the nods of respect now.
Yeah.
Not nods of like, oh, what? Like, oh, hey, like a little familiarity to that.
I like your Puma tracksuit
nods. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, I like your vibe. I like your vibe too. And then I get to press row, and my normal seat's gone. First off, so I start panicking because like now national media is there.
Oh, okay. I'm like, who did
it? So they're all there. Yeah, the people who weren't there the entire season haven't been there. All they show up. You know, trying to come late at least, whatever. So I go find my seat. I'm not sitting beside Daniel Wagner. I'm not sitting beside the Moj, and I love sitting beside the Moj. We talk wrestling all the time.
Oh, yeah, like, right on.
He fucking hates Cody Rhodes. We talk about it all the time.
All
so, right. He hates the way he runs. He talks all the time. He runs like a fucking T-Rex. I'm like, I don't know why he's champ.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Do I hate Cody Rhodes? God damn it, Moj. All right. Yeah. So you had to settle down after some early jitters. You weren't in your regular seat.
I was panicking a bit, but then I sit down and then I watched the intro that the team put together. And it was like fucking going to all the big moments of the years. And I was feeling some emotion. Like I was back when I was a fan. And like it just felt like the good old times in 2011 and how close they came, 94. Just the big moments and leading into this game. And then you kind of sit there realizing like how, you know, special it is to be in the playoffs. Because we forget, it's been 9 years. Like, again, 2011 was the height of that era. 2012 was that depressing, like, we all kind of knew. It was kind of like, and we'd all, like, we were like, oh, fuck, we had to go through this again to get another chance at the Cup. There was a different vibe, right? You've been there, you took it a bit for granted. And then 2015 was this weird, like, it's like Desjardins, it just felt like a weird team. And, like, there was a bit of optimism, but we're like, oh, yeah, no, yeah. Like, we get it. And it was still pretty close to 2012. But now that it's been 9 years, everyone, like, it really was, like, 2001, where, like, people were, like, had gotten other messy years. And it was like, my God, like, we're so happy to have this again. And I think with social media, it's just increased the spotlight in the sport and kind of the fan investment has kind of gone up even higher. So, like, the atmosphere in the building before puck drop, people were chanting and cheering. And, like, you know, this, like, the atmosphere was electric, as cliche as it is. They do their intro. They've got the fucking live quartet shows up out of nowhere. I lose my shit over that. Because that's, like,
so
fucking
wrestling.
Yeah, that's wrestling to a T. The spotlight hits him. It's like they're playing fucking Mozart.
Yeah,
like I sat there. I was like, "This, I can't get better than this." And they nailed that.
It became art at that point.
Yeah,
yeah. String quartet makes anything art now.
I was waiting for Bobby Roode to show up. It would have been perfect. Mm-hmm. I just would have been great. And then they go obviously to U2, which is U2's like iconic just because everyone loves it. So I get that. For me, the vibe dropped a little bit because that song's kind of slow. It didn't hit me as hard, but people who love that song, I get it. They love that moment. Like, the Mozart song fucking got you, like, you wanted to fight someone. And then U2 kind of got you, like, going, oh, and that's not the vibe I wanted before
that's
the
that's such show. A strange statement. Oh, yeah, when the Mozart was going, I was ready to fuck. I was ready to throw hands.
I was ready
and
to throw
the
down
And then the U2 came on, and I really, really chilled out.
Yeah, it did. It kind of slammed me down, because you're kind of a bit reflective, but whatever. Fine, it worked. People liked it. Tile power's going off. First period is just fucking full of hits and crowd losing shit over every hit. Like, Tyler Myers and Zadorov, that's the best game either of them played for the Canucks ever. They were just fucking, like, that's, we go over it back and forth about how important tall players are, and there's, I think it's overstated, obviously, the Gudbranson era, but, like, in the playoffs, it is important, because, like, you could beat the shit out of the team, and Myers and Zadorov just fucking, like, they made Nashville look small. Like, rather than get the puck, they just fucking hit him into the boards, and it was amazing. Like, the crowd lost
their
shit.
They're the Lord of the Rings statues, man. They're just
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah, fuck yeah. You're not crossing yeah. either. And JT Miller was fucking, like, he's a fan favorite for a reason because he plays that rough style and he was hitting people and he dragged it. Like, his line was the best line by far.
Yeah.
Elias Pettersson, not a great game for him. I think he's very lucky the Canucks won because, like, I know he's playing with kind of, like, weird line mates. And out of nowhere, they put Lafferty in his line, so that's a bit of an odd situation.
Yeah.
But, like, as your top player, he's got to be able to fucking work with that. And again, only one game, but it did feel like they were able to neutralize him pretty easily, whereas JT Miller fought through that and kind of found his space, and you're like, okay, like, that's what we need more of. So we'll see what happens with Pettersson. I'm not writing him off by any stretch of the imagination, but from one game, like, you can see how JT Miller is, like, fucking going to get beloved if he keeps playing that way.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be in the building last night as well. Just absolutely crazy. Chills, goosebumps, all that stuff. As far as the Canucks and how they played, obviously they came out ready to go. But I thought, like, in the first period, Nashville could have easily had, like, 3 goals. Demko had to make some pretty big saves early where even though the shots were relatively even, it's like, oh, well, Nashville's chances kind of make me uneasy. And then them getting the first goal, like, I don't know, I kind of feel like I could easily say this in hindsight because everything worked out, but it's like, all right, yeah, it's going to happen. That's all well and good. How would you rank people in terms of how bad they needed one? And where would Lindholm be on that list?
That, honestly, like, that's massive for him. Because he is, like, Tyler Myers, after the game, did, like, defend him. Like, he does a lot of the you know, the little things that doesn't give enough credit. And people don't give him enough credit from the fans or media. And I do think, like, yeah, we had that whole talk. Like, Kuzmenko down the stretch scored a lot of goals for Calgary, which is great. I love watching Kuzmenko play. He's fun to watch. But he is very one-dimensional. Like, we all know that. And Lindholm, he can still be a big factor for your team. And we're seeing maybe, potentially, when they put Lindholm with Garland and Dakota Joshua, I think we all kind of thought, is this like Bluger was good with them, but now you're putting Lindholm who's even better than Bluger. Like, that could be an elite third-line, second-line tweener, yeah. Right? Like, that could be a line. That, and cause, so if that line goes off and Pettersson finds his game and Miller continues playing the way he does, the Canucks are a problem for people.
Yeah.
And Demko, like that's what makes them a problem in the playoffs for a lot of teams. Like, I know a lot of teams where that was the whole thing. Oh, who do you want to face? Vancouver. And I kind of get that to some degree. But if the Canucks get that third line being an elite unit like that, and Dakota Joshua keeps playing the way he does, and Garland keeps playing the way he does, and Lindholm starts fucking meshing with him, like, you're buying time for Pettersson to find his game. Say they go off, and Miller's going to keep playing well, and Demko plays amazing, and your defense stands up like that. Like, and again, it's not like they're going to win the cup, but like, you can see them going a couple rounds just based on that alone. Like, I think they're deeper than other people give them credit for when everything's going their way.
Yeah, because, you know, they were inconsistent down the stretch, of course, a little up and down, but also they didn't have their Vezina caliber goaltender during that time. So you talk about, like, you know, Pettersson maybe taking a little bit of time to get going. Demko can give you that time and space to kind of find your footing. And I think that's, you know, super important, especially in a game like yesterday. You've got DeSmith or Shilov's in there or whatever. And yeah, that thing's 3-0 going into the second period. And the air is absolutely out of that building, right? Because we've been through some shit, too. So the fact that, like, yeah, we're ready to start this game, but if they go down multiple goals early, oh, man, it would have been a not super great vibe there.
Well, I mean, that's the beautiful part of Coach Talk. It is all season he's talked about, like, learning lessons and learning to play uncomfortable games and not overextend yourself. And the Canucks didn't panic once. They didn't overextend themselves. It did look like all those lessons that Talk had talked about wasn't just, you know, just telling you what you wanted to hear. He actually meant it. And the Canucks looked very calm. And after the game, JT Miller echoed that sentiment about how, like, we just weren't panicking at all. We just knew to take our time. We're going to push too hard. And Quinn Hughes himself said maybe we can push a bit harder to start the game, which I get. But, like, overall, the team just settled things down, got their chances, and then in the span of 12 seconds won the game. Like, that moment was just... I was just trying to edit the first goal, the second goal they've got, and the third goal went off. I'm like, what the... That was the loudest I heard of that building in a decade.
Bedlam. Absolute bedlam. No one was sitting down after that goal. We're still going nuts and celebrating and stuff. And then Joshua scored that one, which everybody could see coming. They were just hawks down there all over the boards, quick turnover. And oh man, just unbelievable. What a great all time. And I'm aware there's hyperbole. It's game one of the playoffs, but after what we've been through as fan base, all time Canucks moment kind of right there. Like, to go up 3-2 then, and that's just fantastic. And what was it that go ahead, sir.
I mean, that's just kind of one of the things that, like, I've kind of realized over time. Like, obviously the Stanley Cup is the main goal for any fan or any person wanting to watch the team. But you do have to kind of take the moments where you can, because you're not every team wins the Cup. It just happens away. Like, I
most of them
that Chicago don't. Series, the Vancouver one, like, I like treasure that more than I did before, because, like, at least they got it. Had they lost every series to them, that would have fucking burned me alive. You can still, even though Charlotte, you did with the Cup that year, I don't give a shit. They beat them in a very iconic fashion. Like, that means something. Getting to, you know, the third round means something. Getting, like, even just one game, like, I'm not trying to make it too big, but even getting that one win in that one game after 9 years of shit, like, it was fun to be a fan again. It was fun to watch the team again. Because, like I said in the stand, she's like, it's become an art form to become self-deprecating of this team.
Yep.
To, like, beat people to the punch. Like, you can't say anything worse with the team that we have. Yeah. And knowing that it's been shit and, like, just having infighting with the fan base and, like, not being able to enjoy the game and, like, just game planning and fucking shitty off seasons. And so to have that one game just kind of come together was, like, super cathartic, because it was like, no, this is what the fucking, this is what it's all about, right? Enjoying the game again, not, like, the off-ice shit. Like, that's always been kind of the main focus for the majority of the last 9 years.
Draft lottery results and tanking and this and that and losing, allowing 5 goals in a game a bunch and... You know, it's nice that it can be this now. And also the fact that it was a guy like Dakota Joshua as well. And I think that's one thing that the fan base is really just thirsting for right now, is a folk hero to come out, like a Connor Garland going off in the playoffs, or someone to have, like, a really, really great run. And a guy like Dakota Joshua, who has had an outstanding season, getting a goal that big at that time. Like, I don't know if there's anybody on the team that would have scored that it would have made that bigger.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of got that, like, love for him. And then, obviously, when he was out with an injury, the team kind of stumbled as well. So it made it kind of go into his, you know, oh, shit, maybe we need to go to more than we thought. And just the patience he showed in that goal, just to drag it long enough to get that. Like, that's the shit in my head I want to do in beer league, but then I panic and just shoot it. But he's like, nope, I'm holding this shit. Like, fucking fantastic. he's a guy that honestly, like, you know, halfway through the season, I was like, you know what? He's playing well. He's going to price himself out of the market. You know, good for him.
Yep.
See you later. Now it's like, no, he's got to stay. Like, this kid has got, like, more to his game than I realized. I apologize. I wasn't familiar with your game. I do think that they need to find a way to keep him. Like, I'm at the point now where I, like, Hronek, I like him as a player. But if they got rid of that contract or like, hey, Zadorov and Dakota, come on back, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Like, they're not going to pay him no money. Dakota Joshua, you will still make millions of dollars here. Maybe not the amount you could make on, you know, Columbus or San Jose or wherever the hell you might be going. But also, with this team, the way they've played, there's something here. So you kind of got to ask yourself, okay, you're a UFA, but are you possibly going into a shittier situation for a bigger bag? And is that necessarily what you want?
Yeah, I think that's where you have to give credit also to the coaching staff, because he might sit there. And I think there's a, like, the trust between the Canucks and the coaches has never been higher in the last 9 years between Talky and the current staff. So if you're Dakota, maybe you think to yourself, like, this coaching staff has helped me elevate and unlock this within me. I'm gonna ride with them for a while longer. Obviously, the money has to make sense, like, if maybe it gets a close effort, he's like, you know what? I'd rather grow and keep playing with the coaching staff that believes in me rather than, like, go to some other team. And maybe he's like, I go to another team, I don't perform as well, I get put down to the lineup. Like, maybe he's like, no, this is a team that I can be a star on, and I can be a central, or at least a central figure on it, even if it's on the elite third line. And the coaching staff trust me, I trust them, and maybe he sticks around, right? So, and that's the thing with the playoffs. It makes heroes out of players that were just random players, and we never got to see that for years. And, like, that was always the hope with Tyler Myers. Like, in the playoffs, can this guy come around and just, like, fucking showcase his size? And that was kind of the hope with Zadorov as well. Like, what can this guy do in the playoffs? And for me, this year, especially with Connor Garland, just, like, watching him win all those board battles, I'm like, I want to see the guy in the playoffs. And he fucking came through, like, gangbusters.
Of course he did. And it wasn't just from that, like, go-ahead goal. Garland was going all game, getting in the corners. Like, he was feisty. He's playing exactly, well, I wouldn't say like he was all season. He added that plus one, plus two to his game in the playoffs, which was awesome to see. Yeah, no, the Dakota Joshua thing for sure. I mean, pardon my ignorance, but he wasn't anything elsewhere prior to being here, right? So it's a good situation, a good scenario, and, you know, hopefully they can, you know, maybe attract some other, like, UFAs want to possibly come here and make this a good destination for free agents again to play with people the caliber of future Norris winner Quinn Hughes.
Well, I mean, tell me Chris Tanev doesn't want to come back.
Fuck yes. Like, we reported that he would be coming back to Vancouver. It was a little monkey paw. I'll get that. He will be traded, and he will return to Vancouver. I don't know if we want to go on a limb and say that he will re-sign with Vancouver, but, you know, he'll be back.
He'll be back. He'll be back.
I
will say that, I said on Twitter, and I don't know if people saw it, but, like, I did have the... I was given the ability to vote in awards this year for the NHL.
Yes! Finally.
And so I'll let the results come out later. But I will say that is it true that the fifth vote on that Selke trophy, I gave it to Garland.
Yes!
Yep, I'm standing up. Because I saw him all year. He deserves it. That's not like a homer vote. I watched this guy play. This guy, his defensively is a fucking unit. I'm sorry, he earned that one.
Yeah. Did you write it in as like Toyota Corolla? And then they
might throw it out. Like, I'm sorry, you can't vote for a car. No shit. Okay.
I didn't. It's Corolla Garland. Yeah. Get familiar with his game. You talk about Rick Tocchet, and, you know, lots been talking about him, you know, and the coaching job he's done with the team. There's one thing I definitely got to say, and when they were up 3-2, they did such a great job of still being aggressive, but not being irresponsible. Because it's tough. I don't think the Canucks are a team that can be the LA Kings and sit back on a one-goal lead and just get... Because they get too, you know, I guess jittery or whatever, especially a team like Nashville that can, you know, score quick goals. So that was the thing I think that impressed me the most is when they were up 3-2, they didn't take their foot off the gas, but they also didn't get reckless. And that just screams good coaching to me.
Yeah, they kind of, even with the hitting they're doing, they didn't chase too many hits in the night. Like, the only time I think they were overly aggressive was the first power play goal by Nashville. They tried to do almost a man-to-man coverage. They kept chasing the puck, which can work if you get the puck, but Nashville's power play is really good.
Yeah.
They got burned on it. And then after that, to their credit, they settled back to a more traditional penalty kill and shut them down the rest of the night in the penalty kill. So they made adjustments. They didn't go, didn't chase the game. They let the game come to them, like you said, and show that patience that, like, again, all season long, during that tough stretch of the season to end the season, that was Rick Tocchet. Like, I'm glad we're having these stretches. Like, this, we got to learn to play uncomfortable. And I think it paid off.
Yep. Who do you think tops your needs one rankings right now? And why is it Mikheyev?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of confused why that was where I almost thought when they were down 2-1. I'm like, did Tkachuk kind of, you know, overthink himself? Did he do a bit of 4D chess here when he put Lafferty on that line instead of Mikheyev? And I've obviously been a bit of a critic of Mikheyev, but he at least was kind of helping Pettersson and Höglander generate chances. At least the puck was in the right zone. Mm-hmm. And with Lafferty, like, I like Lafferty as a player. He did a good defensive back check on one play, but like, he doesn't have the same skill set that kind of fits in there. Yeah. Like, I and especially after they haven't played together a while, it felt like everything was a bit off. And I think Höglander was nervous, honestly. We've seen Höglander play really well this season. He didn't seem like he had control of the puck at all. So for me, like, I kind of want to bump Mikheyev back to that second line, just reform that unit, because they were perfectly fine. Maybe not scoring goals, but at least they were generating chances. But for me, honestly, I need again, Pettersson had that game near the end of the season where he got some goals. You're like, okay, maybe this is it. But I still think Pettersson needs that goal.
Yeah.
Like, he needs to feel it. There's something about, like, I don't know if we'll find out the magical injuries or if it's his confidence or if it's just wear and tear, he's just isn't feeling it, whatever it is, but he's not looking like kind of the same player we've seen earlier in the season. He's not really, you know, he's still playing well defensively. He's not doing anything egregiously bad, but he's going to have that spotlight of, oh, you just demanded the bag from us. Like, where is the production? Like, that's now on his back now.
But thankfully, there's a good enough supporting cast there where he's got some time to figure it out. You're not just like, and it's great to get that game one win, because obviously, as you had mentioned, pressure would be much, much higher and a lot more things focused on Pettersson if they had lost that game, which they very well could have, if not for a couple things. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's kind of, you see it around the league. That's like kind of the Mitch Marner curse, like him getting railed. Like, yeah. Like, skill players that don't hit, you're like, that's the worst person to be in the playoffs if you don't perform.
Yeah.
Because you get paid a lot and you're a skilled guy. And then if you don't get points, you can't perform in the playoffs, gets thrown in your face every fucking day.
Yeah.
It's like, so I don't, you know, behoove him for having to go through that. It's going to be rough for him, but he's got to find a way. I mean, Pettersson's like one of the most hyper-competitive people in the entire fucking league.
Yeah.
Like, for anything that's like kind of like the Canuck fans where we say, like, no one can say anything worse about us. Pettersson says a million things worse about himself than you could ever say.
Yeah.
So he's like on the job. He's beating himself up for everything he didn't do right in that game. So I think he'll come out much stronger the second game.
That's what I tell people who have authority over me to stop them from criticizing me is, no, there's, trust me, I'm saying the things you don't need to. I'm not saying the things. I just don't want them to.
BD Wong, you don't got to tell me that. I get it.
BD Wong, I get it, man. You go ahead, you hold on to that. There's nothing you can say that's worse than what I say to myself.
I don't know. I think he still said things worse than you. What a promo. I just still think about it every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
If someone told you a year after you saw Jurassic Park that guy would be cutting a promo on you later in life, I don't know what you'd say to yourself.
I don't know what would be weirder, that or someone telling me in like 1997 when I'm watching episodes of Oz on Showcase on Fridays Without Borders that Father Mukata is just absolutely going to destroy you. You specifically one day.
One day you're going to be obliterated by this guy.
He's going to get you. It's like finding out you're going to die at some point, like specifically, yeah. Like, hey, at some point, Ferris wheel's going to get you. You're like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, yeah, just waiting for it to happen. Father Mukata, hey, the guy who was the fifth lead in Father of the Bride 2 is going to absolutely destroy you. Trying to remember what else he's been in, but those are the big ones, I guess. I don't know. Did I tell you on the 19th of March, the Buffalo game, my boss, who's from Michigan, had never been to a pro hockey game before. So we got tickets to the Buffalo game. And it was really interesting seeing the fan base from like an outsider's perspective, because it was a black skate jersey game.
Nice. Yeah.
And I went with another one of my coworkers, and I brought jerseys for all of us so we could all fit in. And I was explaining on the way to the game the lore of the black skate jersey, all that, the free the skate, all that jazz. And then he had said, but this other jersey, this is great. The blue and green one is fantastic, and that's an awesome logo. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? It is. And when they scored and they played the Simple Minds song, he's like, do they play this after every goal? I'm like, yeah. He's like, that's amazing. Yes, it is. He also loves Connor Garland. Fell in love with him right away. Well, I also leaned over and I told him, see that guy number 8 right there, Connor Garland? Oh, he's a little fucker. And he scored the greasy kind of dig-in goal. So he fell in love with Connor Garland instantly. And then I was explaining to him about Quinn Hughes and how he went to University of Michigan because, again, my boss, big Michigan guy. And Samantha Chang was there, and I pointed out her and her like Michigan Hughes jersey. So he's watching Hughes play, and he says, oh, is he like the best skater on the team? And I'm like, sir, he's the best skater in the sport. I believe. Like, he's great. So I think I lost track of him in the second intermission, and then he came back from the team store, brand new Blue Orca Quinn Hughes jersey. He got jerseyed up. He's committed. He's back this week. He visits like once a month or so. So he's back this week, and I was sending him all sorts of videos and stuff from last night going, you don't even know, man. Canucks playoffs, we desperate. And, you know,
beast.
Yep. So getting converting new fans. Just loves Connor Garland. And he like texted me from the hotel like two nights later when Garland got a big goal against Montreal. He's like, what a shot. I love this guy.
Garland's amazing.
Yeah. International superstar.
Yep.
Anything else about the game? In game one, it was just such a, I don't know, magic. It's a magical evening. The towel hanging off of Roger Nielsen's statue and people going nuts. The fucking pre-parade on Scott and 72. People have been desperate for this, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a lot of people that were young and haven't seen the playoffs now, like more young adults get to actually celebrate and lean into it. They've heard about it. Now they get to experience it. There's also the old wise veterans out there that have been dying for it again. And I think that someone complaining about, like, you know, we want the cup on Scott Road. Like, fuck that. That's the fucking Scott Road. That's what they do. Give them, like, it's been 9 years. Who gives a shit? Enjoy
yes,
it.
Yes,
like,
it's hilarious.
Do we not want the cup? Like, what do we? Who's? Where's the line?
We want a 5-game exit in the conference finals. That's a good thing to build off of for this season. I trust Alvin for what he's going to do in the offseason. Rutherford's making good decisions. No, we want the cup.
All the time. Yeah, we want the cup. Like, fuck it.
It's a bit wordy.
It's a bit wordy. So, yeah, I mean, people should enjoy this moment. Like we said, like, they could flame out the next four games. Who knows? Like, that would be disappointing as shit. God, at least we have that one game to remember. I know. But, like, at least people got to experience something that was fun right now. And I think, for, like, I've said all along, like, getting past the first round makes this season a resounding success for me. So, just beat the Predators. And, yeah, it would be disappointing if they go out in the second round. But at least they had a season to remember, and they had that fucking game one and won a series. That would be like, just, it makes you remember what hockey's all about.
And things are pointing upwards for like the trajectory is there. I recall the 07 series against Anaheim in the second round. They beat Dallas in that classic series in the first round. The first year with Luongo, even though it was disappointing that they got knocked out in the second round, you still had faith and hope that there's something here. They're going to keep building off of this. And then obviously they kept running into Chicago, but we were all right. There was something there they were building. So even if they don't win the cup this year, and there seems to be, you know, a kind of tough road to get there, a series win and all that, there's success there. And with the turnaround that front office has done to the team in such a short amount of time, more ability to kind of, you know, get out from under some bad contracts that you inherited and stuff. Yeah, I got nothing but hope for the future, which is such a weird thing to say. You tell me I'm going to feel that way 2 years ago. Yeah, no chance.
Yeah, again, it goes down to the reputation of the team, the reputation of the coaching staff. That's going to make it easier kind of fill in those free agents, like, in a more, find more of the bluegrass out there that maybe are willing to come to Vancouver on a one-year deal, because they know they're going to have a great season that'll help their contract later, and they know it's going to be a good season for them. And it just, I think they are trending upwards, and so it is one of those things where, yeah, for the first time in a long time, you can actually see the next couple of years being kind of fun.
Yeah, how about that? It's crazy. What do you think of the Predators fan base, social media?
We've seen way worse. They're not good at this. Yeah, they're trying, but it's like, we've survived Chicago and Boston. We're hardened by what we've gone through. So it's like, it's cute. It's like your little kid brother kind of kick you. Like, good for you, I guess.
I love them coming at the seats.
Yeah, like, we're on the same page.
We've been saying blue the seats since 2018 and feeling it since, what, 98, 99? Yeah. Like, yeah. We hate them too.
No one's defending that shit. No one's like, how dare you attack our shitty seats?
Not a single person will step up and defend those seats. So, no, fair game. Have at them. So, any other series in the Stanley Cup playoffs you're interested in or kind of looking over at? The Leafs series?
Oh, Boston-Toronto. I got it. Because either way, I win if someone loses in that series. That's been kind of interesting to see. And then New York Islanders, fucking Bo Horvat's cursed. They had the fucking 3-1 lead and they end up losing 5-3 tonight. They're down 2-0 in the series. I don't like Lou Lamoriello. I think he needs to be out of the league, so I'm hoping that they get swept. Like, nothing against Bo at this point, but I just want Lou Lam to be out of there. Out of the playoff news, I don't know how my Buffalo Sabres have hired Lindy Ruff again. I don't know what the fuck's going on there. What are we fucking doing?
You said that again. I was looking at it. Is this an old tweet? Like, they're going to run it back?
Tight, almost like a playoff game. Wait, who, Lindy?
They saw what Aquilini did and said, oh, us too. We're also going to reset it back. And
it made no sense.
Oh, man. Yeah, I feel for you.
I don't think it's going to go well. He's not going to have Hasek this time. But what if he does?
Can you, maybe one of their young goalies turns it around.
I'll come back on one condition, and Hasek is still just an absolute dominator.
That'd be amazing. Comes in for 1 year.
Yeah, and they win the cup. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing when he went to Ottawa. He was playing so well. You're like, holy shit, maybe he can help him. And then he blew out his fucking groin.
And then that was it. All right. Well, very much looking forward to game two. You going to be covering game two from the rink as well?
Oh, yeah. Game two. No, game two, Quadrelli's at that game. Okay. And then game five and seven, if needed, I'll be at that.
Awesome. Right on.
I am kind of worried, though. Like, if it goes to overtime, because all the new policy, the NHL gets there. They have, normally you go down the elevator, and then you go to the room, talk to the three players, and then go see the coach. It takes like 20 minutes. Now you go down there. We had to wait in the hallway for a good 20 minutes. We had to walk halfway around the arena to a new kind of like media room. Player wasn't ready for the podium yet. So they went to this other room that we talked to the three players. But then like there's so much media there. Everyone wants their fucking questions. So we're talking to like Tyler Myers for fucking like 10, 15 minutes, which no, I like Tyler, but that's a long time. And then we go out and go to find the two players on the podium, which was Hughes and to go to Joshua. And then they answer questions for fucking 20 minutes. And then they leave. Then Rick Tocchet comes out. And it was like an hour, 10 minutes of like post game of that stuff. And so if there's an overtime game that goes like even double overtime, like I don't know how late it would be at the arena. That's me. I didn't even think of that. Like that could, that's, do they do post game stuff? I guess I'll find out. Like I can just imagine them be like, yeah, we're good. We don't need quotes. Yeah. It's fucking like third overtime. See you later, which I'd be fine with. So yeah, we'll see. It was cool, but it's definitely, a different beast in the playoffs. There's so many different people I haven't seen before.
Yeah. Did I tell you? Did I see I met the Big Township at the game?
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was walking around the concourse in between the intermission, and he called my name out and introduced himself as the Big Township. Fuck, of course, Greg and Lad Wasson. And then, we chatted. We talked about Star Trek a lot. We talked about country music, basketball, all of his favorite things. Yeah, and I posted on Twitter, and then he responded back by saying that I was shorter than he thought I would be. Which is,
oh wow, ouch! This is the smallest Jordan. We know that. We talk about the show.
No, super, super great guy. Was awesome to meet him. Are you considering? Would you go to any of the watch parties there for the road games? That's interesting.
If I wasn't writing,
$15. Go there.
I mean, after COVID and like spending so much time inside, like, I think people are gonna have fun just going out to experience a live audience. It's like when you watch the wrestling in the theater, just to be around people that you like. It's just fun. Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, so cool. All right, well, looking forward to game two and looking forward to hopefully a relatively smooth series for the Vancouver Canucks. Our other team, we've got two show teams that are in the playoffs at the same time, Wyatt. What a time to be alive. Do you want to? Yeah, for now. I want to talk a little Sixers for a bit?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, over in the Eastern Conference of the National Basketball Association, the Philadelphia 76ers didn't have Embiid down the stretch for a couple months because of a leg injury. Interesting. Just like the Canucks didn't have Demko down the stretch for a while. These two teams are linked, I'm telling you. Embiid came back for the final 9 games, of which they won 8, got the 7th seed, won the play-in game against Jimmy Buckets. Jimmy's knee's fucked up. He's likely done for the playoffs.
Yeah, sad.
Yep. And then their reward was a series with the number 2 seed New York Knicks, who they ain't shit, just saying it. They are now, as of recording day, down 2-0 in the series. Embiid, his first dunk since he came back from his knee injury. And
what's he doing? Just alley-ooping to himself? What are we
now
doing?
Now, hold on. The alley-oop to himself was fucking awesome.
It was.
But when he came down on his leg and then collapsed and the entire play went down the floor without him as he was laying there, oh, man, just I was inconsolable. And then the shot of him laying on the court, staring upwards, just blankly saying, essentially, fuck my life. Yep.
Yeah, gone for the rest of the second quarter. Came back in the third quarter. They made it close-ish, but Knicks took game one. And then game two, Embiid's legs fucked up. Apparently he's like half blind. Maxey's had the flu all day. Everything was working against them. Fucking hell of a game, and then choked in the last 20 seconds, up by five. There was all manner of malarkey, but I'm very playoff sad and frustrated right now on the other side of things, being a Sixers fan.
It feels like every year it's an injury or Embiid and shit happening, and it's just whether it's bad. They finally have a coach I like, but it's just now the bad injury luck comes into it. And you're right. I don't think the Knicks are shit. I don't think they're going anywhere. No. This team is very beatable. They're not a great team, but it's just this is not the fully healthy Sixers. And again, it sucks to be like, well, they weren't fully healthy, but it's true. Like this is like a fucking Embiid's knees put together, barely holding on.
He is such a different player, playing with such little confidence, like physically. You can tell he's just so ginger, and it's in his shots, it's in his drives, it's in his running back up the court. Like, at a certain point, you kind of have to wonder. I fucking hate the Boston Celtics, but they are clearly the power in the East and the team to beat in maybe the entire league right now. So Philadelphia, with Embiid's long-term health, the fact that you will finally be free of Tobias Harris's max contract this offseason. You've got the second most cap space in the league behind the Detroit Pistons. Do you possibly punt on fourth down here with this run and maybe shut Embiid down to go on a bitter run for it next year, knowing that the Celtics are just going to probably roll whoever they play?
Yeah, honestly, like that's what I was thinking. Like at this point, do you really want to risk fucking up his knee anymore? I guess like, at the end of the day, doctors know more. Like we don't go with what we know from watching House, but you know, I just feel like, yeah, like if there's any chance of it getting worse, it's fucking rest up, man. I mean, it's not even that. Like even if like, because you know when you've got an injury, you're fucking compensating, right? What if you fucking blows the other knee, compensating for the fact that knee can't hold weight? Like, is that worth it? Like, I don't think it is. It's not. I was willing to give game one, like maybe it holds together and it works and everything's great. But after the second game, it's just like, I don't think it's worth the risk to his career, even as him as a player. Even if he leaves the Sixers, like just him as a player, just take care of yourself, man. Yeah. Like that's your career.
He still scored over 30, still had a good game, but like he could have, he's not dominant. And okay, what if they come back from down 0-2 and they end up beating the Knicks in this series? What's he going to be like in the second round? Eastern Conference Finals Embiid will be literally held together by duct tape. So I don't see him magically healing himself and getting stronger and better as these games go on. So yeah, I'm kind of as, you know, disappointed as I am thinking punt. Fucking Boston.
Punt, 100%.
Fucking Boston. All right. So yeah, both teams in the playoffs. Hopefully things go good for both of them. But for now, let's take a break for halftime. We got some Captain's Corner action when you come back.
100%.
Oh, shit. All right. We'll be right back. It's Trust the Process. Jay Bowman, Wyatt Arndt and Stanchion.
This is my city.
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 Our city.
It's all of ours.
It's all of ours.
And through it all.
And through it all.
And through it all.
Through thick and thin.
We're in this together.
We're in this together.
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 Together. Together.
We're in this together.
Like a family.
Like a family.
So show the heart of a Canuck.
Yeah! What?
So show some heart.
And remember what matters first.
Home.
What?
Home.
What?
Home.
What?
Home.
What?
Home.
Okay!
All right, we are back. It is hour two, Trust the Process. Jay Bowman here with Wyatt Arndt, the Stanchion, and it's time for possibly the best segment in all of podcasting. Should I take the possibly out of it? Do you feel it's definitive at this point?
It's 100% definitive. I don't know why you're even debating it.
All right, definitively the greatest segment in all of podcasting. It's time for Captain's Corner. All right, Wyatt, what have you got cooked up on Captain's Corner today?
We're just going to have a bit of fun. We are going to introduce a new segment for next week.
I,
Can I just say, what? I love when you're like, we're just going to have a bit of fun, and it ends up being the most traumatizing experience of my entire week.
Yeah, it's fair enough. Fair enough. No, what we're going to do is we're going to have a bit of fun. Next week, we're going to have a fun game where we're going to do a series of five movies in which we take the five characters that I tell, what we're gonna, the top five characters, and we're going to recast them with what we think is the worst choice possible. Not to recast them good, but like who would have made this like just fucking the absolute worst. Mm. We can't reuse characters from week to week, so you can't just lean on one character like repeatedly.
One actor?
Came like Jack Black for everything. Oh, yeah. Came like Jack Black it up for everything. So it's going to be, I think, a lot of fun. And we'll you and me will both cast our movies, and then we'll put up for a vote to our trustees to walk us through it. So that'll be a lot of fun. This week, though, because, it's been busy, and I am just exhausted. What we're going to do is we are going just to have a bit of fun, as you know, with some celebrity games.
All right.
So we're going to do a game first to get warmed up, just about guessing the ages of celebrities.
Oh, okay. Ooh, okay. All right. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so I think you can do this. So first up, we're going to go Danny Trejo. Sir, how old is Danny Trejo?
I know it's you mentioned age, but you know he's also, like, crazy short. He's, like, 5'7". Or like 5'8".
Every movie they shoot, they do a fantastic job of perspective. Because like you always think he's tall.
He was on The Masked Singer. And I recognize the voice. And I'm like, I think that's Danny Trejo. But no fucking way. Because that guy's like 5'7", max. Danny Trejo, I'm going to say, is 66 years old.
Is that your final answer?
Yes, sir.
His correct age, 79.
God damn!
Yeah.
I knew it'd be surprising, but wow. Yeah. Good for him.
So we're going to take the actor that we asked you your age of, and we're going to go down just a little bit of a rabbit hole with him and ask two more kind of questions. So I'm going to ask you the IMDb fun game, which is what are the top four things he's known for, according to IMDb?
Oh, I remember me, you, and Mike Paris playing this. We were at the Royal Rumble weekend back in the day. That's good times. All right.
Yep.
Top four that he's known for.
Yes,
Machete.
Sir. Yep.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah. Oh, two for two. They're in that same order, too. Oh, shit.
Oh, I think they're going to sneak in a little Spy Kids action in there. I'm going to go Con Air for number three.
Okay.
And, yeah. Was he in the first Spy Kids? We'll go, Spy Kids for the last one.
Okay, you got the first two right. The next two, though, it's Predators.
I love Predators.
And Machete Kills.
There were two Machetes?
Yep.
Fuck. And he's 79? Damn. Yeah.
We don't know if he'll be a third in this race.
Machete 2 at, like, 75 years old.
And to finish it off, we're going to take his top movie that he's known for, and you have to give me what the Rotten Tomato rating was for that movie. Guess.
Which one was it? It was Machete?
Yep.
Okay. I think there's going to be some critics who are like, yeah, you know what? It was what it was. I think Machete is...
You know
what?
Give me critic rating and give me audience.
Oh, shit. All right. I feel like the critic rating for Machete is 58%. And I feel the audience score is going to be 81%.
Critics gave it 70%.
Yep.
Yep. Fans, only 63%.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Oh, man, completely backwards from what I thought it would be. That was fun.
All right, sir. Next up is Macaulay Culkin.
Oh, shit. Okay. I can think I might be able to math this. The Culk is 41.
So close, 43.
Oh!
Right in the
All right. So now it's his top four movies?
Known for. Yep.
All right. Known for, Jesus, Home Alone. Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Yep.
Is Uncle Buck going to make the list? Is The Good Son going to make the list? I'm going to go Uncle Buck's in there. And, My Girl.
You were so close to 84 for 4.
What fucked it up?
You mentioned the one that, Uncle Buck wasn't there.
Oh,
remember how horrifying it was to see a body thrown off a top of an overpass?
Was it The Good Son?
Yeah.
No! But also, fucking respect IMDb's top four, because yes.
We're going to go to this top movie, which is Home Alone. I need the critic ratings and the audience ratings.
Okay, I feel like everyone was dialed in on this thing being a classic. It's so good. I'm going to go with the critic rating on Home Alone is 93%. and I'm going audience score. How do you dislike it? Audience score is, there's dicks out there. 94%. 93, 94.
Audience score, 80%.
Get the fuck out of here.
Critic score, 66%.
No way!
Yep. I'm going to go through the bad ones here. Bob Ross for Tampa Tribune.
I got a little script problem down here. We're not going to talk to you. A little script. I put a little dialogue issue down here. And...
he said that it was boorish, ham-fisted, and a sloppy screen comedy.
All right, what's the son of a bitch's name?
Bob Ross for the Tampa Tribune.
Is he on Twitter? I don't jump into people's DMs and harass them randomly, but...
Noel Taylor from the Ottawa Citizen says, Kevin learned some lessons. Families aren't bad after all. Families are nice. Being home alone isn't much fun. He's right. Bad review.
Hold the fucking phones here. He had an incredible time being home alone, with the exception of when the burglars broke in. And I feel like even then, he was having a pretty all right time. The fucking zip line to the treehouse. Wow. Yeah, man, he's loving it.
Bill Dupre. Home Alone is a lot like most Christmas gifts. Nicely packaged and fun to open, but not very useful or tasteful.
That is an all-time career performance for Daniel Stern. That guy was on fire in the fucking early to mid-90s. This is City Slickers. Fucking, oh.
Okay. Basically, this is from Helen Node from LA Weekly. Basically, Home Alone isn't funny because it says Kevin must love his family, even though they make his life unlivable.
All right. I'll give you Uncle Frank. Yeah. All right. I'll 100% give you Uncle Frank. You know what I loved Uncle Frank was when he's replaying. You're familiar with Home Alone, yeah? When, like, he hits him with the, look what you did, you little jerk, with the spilling of the pizzas and stuff. And then when Kevin's replaying it back later, when he's remembering all the talking heads of his family being mean to me, the extra stank his imagination puts on how Uncle Frank said that is incredible. Look what you did, you little jerk.
Yeah, because that's the impact it would have as a kid. It's perfect.
Those people are all morons. I know it's a matter of taste and stuff like that, but they have none.
Last one from Roger Ebert.
Sir. This, I don't know why Storm isn't the leader of the X-Men. She can control the weather. Fuck it.
If Home Alone had limited itself to the things that might possibly happen to a forgotten 8-year-old, I would have liked it more. He wants a real life. Like, they get back from the airport, he's fine.
And then the police decided to check on him again, and then he wasn't afraid of them, and he answered the door, and everything was fine.
That's what Roger Ebert wanted from Home Alone.
You know what, Gene? I feel like them running through the airport and making that flight was very unrealistic. I've been to airports before, and no amount of Chuck Berry Christmas carols are getting you to that gate on time. Jesus, these people.
Yeah, that blows me away. All right, moving on. You need time to think that. You look like you're stunned.
Life view is altered because of these people not liking Home Alone. That's fucked.
All right, this should be a fun one. Daniel Radcliffe. How old is he?
Okay. All right. 2001 was the first Harry Potter movie. I feel like he was, I don't know, fucking 10. So it's been, oh no, I'm trying to do math live on the air. I'll have to cut this out. So 20 years plus 3. So he is 34.
Correct.
Bam!
Yep.
Oh, I get really nervous when I'm doing math because I'm bad at it. All right, 34 years old. Great. All right, best known for.
And I need them in the right order because it's obviously going to be
shit.
A bundle.
Okay. I can do this. Best known for Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows 1 and 2. Harry Potter and the, who was the Sorcerer's Stone or the Philosopher's Stone? The book and movie had a different title.
Sorcerer's Stone was the movie.
The movie one. Yeah. And then, do they want to get cheeky and put in like something else he's done, like Swiss Army Man, or what was that one he did with Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock that was delightful? The Lost City. I'm going to put The Lost City in there at number 4.
Okay, so it was Order of the Phoenix was number 1.
Is Now You See Me in there? Okay.
No, that's good. Deathly Hallows 2 was number 2. Sorcerer's Stone number 3. Number 4, Swiss Army Man.
No! God! How does this always happen?
You mentioned it. You had it. You had your hands.
We're going to have a little fun on the show this week. Okay.
So Order of the Phoenix, Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay. People. Oh, that was the good one. That was with Pattinson. I think Order of the Phoenix, critics gave it 88. No, they fucking love the Harry Potters. Critics gave it 90%, and the audience gave it 92.
Critics 78, audience 81.
I'm bad at that part.
Yep.
Wow. What's their fucking problem with it? It's fine. I don't even like Harry Potter. I'm like, yeah, it's all right. That fight had stakes. They killed Robert Pattinson in it. Right? Oh, no, fuck. That was Goblet of Fire. That was the fourth one. Oh, yeah, the fifth one was a bit ass. Okay, no, I stand by it. That's fine.
Up next, Jeff Bridges.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to get Trejo'd here. Jeff Bridges, I feel like, is super old because he's been old since I was a kid. Jeff Bridges is... Oh, now I'm gonna. I almost overcompensate. He's like 93. No, Jeff Bridges is 72.
74.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
Don't worry. I get progressively worse at this as we go section.
Yeah,
to section.
You get better at the ages, but not
all
the
right.
Critics.
His top four. I'm gonna go with. They're gonna be in the right order too.
Not for that. It's just for Harry Potter because Harry Potter was.
Oh, okay. All right. So his top four. I'm gonna go with. I think True Grit's gonna be in there. Did he win an Oscar for that? I think he did. True Grit. Tron. Why am I thinking that Blown Away is in there? Big Lebowski.
Okay.
Big Lebowski, Tron, True Grit, and... Yeah, Blown Away.
Big Lebowski and True Grit, correct. The other movies were Crazy Heart.
Yep. All right, fair.
And Starman.
The fuck is Starman?
From 1984, an alien takes the form of a young Wisconsin widow's husband and makes her drive him to his departure point in Arizona. Distrustful government agents, along with a more ambivalent scientist, give pursuit in hopes of intercepting them. John Carpenter.
Fucking E.T. or something? What's going on here?
Yeah, it's like a John Carpenter version of E.T. Rotten Tomatoes for Big Lebowski.
Okay. All right. I'm thinking the critics. Oh, it's the Coen brothers, and they always go, oh, Coen brothers are geniuses. But I've... overshot it a bunch. I'm going critic score is 79 and the audience score is 84.
Close. Critics 80%. You're one off. The audience 93. Audience
they do. Yeah, they do. Yeah, especially that one.
Mm-hmm. And our last random celebrity, bit of a controversial figure in the later half of his career, Mel Gibson.
Oh, fuck Mel Gibson. Oh, but he made Apocalypto and that's really good. You ever see it?
I haven't. No,
oh, it turns into Die Hard in the Jungle. It's really, really, really awesome. Nice. I loved Apocalypto. All right, Mel Gibson is he in his 70s yet? Like, I'm picturing him in, like, Lethal Weapon 3, and he was oldish in the Lethal Weapons. So I'm going to say in the Lethal Weapon movies, he might have been in his 30s. I'm saying he is 70. He's 70.
68 years old.
Yep.
And the four movies he's known
for. Okay. Now, these are his actor, right?
Yes, sir.
I feel like the fucking Patriot's going to be in there, even though it shouldn't be. I'm going The Patriot, Lethal Weapon, Road Warrior, and What Women Want. What an eclectic bunch of movies.
Lethal Weapon 3.
God! I'm not just saying this to say it. I really almost put that one in there because that was my favorite. I love the ex-cop with the armor-piercing bullets. Shit. All right.
Ransom.
Yep. Yeah. Give me back my son.
Conspiracy Theory.
Yep.
And you're going to feel bad about this one.
I feel bad about Braveheart. All of them. Oh, no.
Yeah, that's surprising. That hurts. Oh, wow. What happened there?
That's a fucking disaster. The Patriot? What an idiot.
Yep. He chose Patriot over Braveheart.
Oh, I'm dumb. Okay. All right. My confidence is effectively shattered right now. Are we doing Rotten Tomatoes for Braveheart or The Patriot?
Yes, sir. Braveheart, okay. Yep.
All right. No, that's a really good movie. I'm going to go the critics gave it a 91, and audiences gave it, I'm sure there's probably some, like, British people that saw it and were like, I don't much care for this. I'm going to go with the audience.
That sounds like a Southern accent with a British accent. I do believe I don't care
for
this.
I do declare I may not be a fancy big city lawyer, but I do not think the king...
But I am a patriot, sir, and I demand you get off my lawn.
I do not believe in prima nocta. She's my wife. You cannot sleep with her on my wedding night. I'm going to go the audience gave it an 85.
Audience 85. You nailed that. Yeah, it doesn't matter because you didn't get the movie right, so you failed. But
thank you for, hey, critics, here's a little 76%. Bit, but no.
All right, that game's all right. I do want to go down because I find the bad reviews of good movies interesting. There's one movie to go over. It's one of our favorites. I'm going to go Jurassic Park.
There's bad reviews for Jurassic Park?
There are. So this is Jay Scott from the Globe and Mail who says, it has a thrill or two and a chill or three, but it has no poetry, little sense of wonder, no resonant subtext, no art.
I want to hit him.
Little sense of wonder?
An incredible sense of wonder. And it says that's like, what, three chills it says it has? I'm sorry, no.
Globe and Mail. That's a Globe and Mail guy.
Fucking idiots.
It's Stephen J. Gould, three names for the New York Review of
Is
Books.
Stephen J., like J-A-Y?
Yep. Stephen J. Gould, the New York Review of Books, reviewing a movie. I did not feel I wasted my 2 hours or my $7 plus another two for the indigestible Raptor Bites candy tie-in.
Oh, so he's got a problem with the candy initially. Like, dude, why is that in your review? Fuck off. Take his creds away. All right.
But I was deeply disappointed by so much about the movie.
Oh. Did he say what? You can go and link it and watch the read the article. Or no, it's probably archived or it's, you know, in internet hell or something. Community flag.
Oh yeah, no, he's got a block up for reading his stuff. Probably after that review, he got attacked by people.
Rightfully so.
It's gonna check. Well, I was doing more.
He's objectively wrong.
For all the ingenuity of the movie's engineering, Jurassic Park doesn't have an imagination or the courage to take us any place we haven't been 1,000 times before. It's just a creature feature on amphetamines.
Oh, you've been in a kitchen with a couple raptors, have you?
What a weird review.
You've been on a toilet in a fucking rainstorm eaten by a T-Rex, have you? Not taking us anywhere we haven't been before? God.
Jonathan Rosenbaum, who looks like a very, very old man, says...
That's not what dinosaurs were like. I remember I was there.
It's pretty much that's what this is. There's more soul to be found in any Kong close-up than this film's overplayed reactions.
Did he say Kong close-up? Like he's citing King Kong?
Yes.
Fucking hell. I never met any of these people, but I hate all of them so much.
Oh, that is so bizarre to me.
At its worst, problem, it's inoffensive.
David Butterworth from rec.arts.movies.reviews.
That's a lot of dots, man. I'm sorry.
Creed Blogspot
at geocities.com. Yeah.
He says, the problem with the film, plain and simple, is that it focuses all of its energies on the dinosaurs themselves.
The human drama is what binds that movie together. The peril, the relationships between... Oh.
Let's give a shout out to Marianne Johansson from Flick Philosopher, both F's for that. Oh, the Flick Philosopher, which is good. Just reviewed it 10 out of 10, the definitive dinosaur movie.
It's not fucking hard to do, but yeah. This is the best Jeff Goldblum dinosaur movie on the market today.
All right. Yeah, that was interesting.
It was. Oh, man. Okay. I just can't believe people don't like it. I know it's a matter of taste and everything, and everyone's got their own opinions, but it's Jurassic Park, man.
That's too much about the dinosaurs, bro. Give me King Kong.
A couple of chills, maybe 2.5 thrills, and oh, God damn it. I'm still also on Roger Ebert's Home Alone review. I'm not past that one. That's still rumbling around in the head. Jesus. Okay. Well, I don't know if we can even continue. I think we wrap it up. You down?
Yeah, we were all dipped. Yeah, I'm good. We're all dipped too much. I feel that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, yeah, we'll hit the outro and get out of here. So, Trust the Process, part of the Hockey Podcast Network. You can catch the show and its podcast versions on iTunes and Spotify. If you want to be part of the process, follow us at TTP Show Van on Twitter. Keep your eye out for the call for questions using the hashtag TTP Show. We wanted to get a nice episode out, hopefully before game two here, so I didn't ask for the questions this time, but we likely will next time. Thanks to our trustees for leaving reviews on iTunes, and thanks for sticking around. I know, you know, we've both been super busy traveling, and Wyatt, you've got 5, 6, 7 jobs right now that you're killing it at all of them, so we appreciate the patience. We love doing the show, and we'll do it as frequently as we can for you. So if you want to hear more from me, subscribe and follow to At The Movies 10 Years Later, me and my childhood friend Janine watching and reviewing whatever movies were number one at the box office 10 years ago. Wyatt, you also, in addition to the litany of other jobs you have, you've got a job where you have a borderline real podcast about movies.
Yeah, real podcast, competed with Flip Philosopher for all the views, but it was 9.5 years ago at The Movies Later that we ran into a little flick called The Grudge.
Ah, yes.
Just beat out Shall We Dance. Again, me and my parents were on the rocks and had a host of revolving... revolving door of hosts. I am tired.
Yeah. And this is where I don't jump all over you for making
you
a
should.
Mistake.
I am pathetic, and I should have done that. So here we go. I guess that was pretty cool. I got my friend to come down, Jason Biggs. Go Coast.
From Loser.
Yeah. I guess... Okay, you know what? I'll give you Jason Biggs. So let's go.
All right, Saving Silverman, Loser. All right. Well, there's got to be probably two American Pies on there. I'm going to American Pie 1 and American Pie 2. Fuck it. I think Loser is on there. And do I roll the dice with Saving Silverman? I do. Saving Silverman.
American Reunion.
Ah!
You almost had the feel
set. I almost said that one, too. I was like, American Pie 3 going to be on there? Okay. All right.
So on the host show, we had a couple guests as well discuss it. Terry Hatcher was kind of
shit.
By.
Lois Lane herself. Yep. They're real and they're spectacular.
Yeah. B Rabbit himself, Eminem. M was down to talk. Yep. And a little bit strange guest, but Chris Humphries was available. So we got Chris Humphries, former Nets. Instead.
The basketball player?
Yeah. He likes movies. Everyone loves movies. So I don't know why you're judging.
Sorry. Yeah,
what a lineup. He's surprisingly in depth.
What a lineup. All right, well, that's it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to eat your Werther's candies, and no matter how bad things may seem, you can always trust the process.